All right. Robert, welcome. Good to see you. We're just getting ready to get started. I just hit record and
Thank you. Good evening to all.
Jim here has volunteered to facilitate today's conversation. So I think he's going to jump in with a quick highlight overview of a couple of the articles, and then I'll be on standby to poll for the favorite. So over to you, Jim.
Okay. As usual, we have a good mix of articles, a blend of topics. And I individually, as I hope each, have different reactions to what is being said by these authors. But so the first article, one at the top of the list anyway, was about reframing the return to office conversation. And the authors are suggesting that the dialogue of mandate, the dialogue or the monologue, I should say, or the broadcast thereof of mandate return, and at the opposite extreme, the let's have a conversation with each individual and see if we can accommodate what's going on out there. It's just not working, and some structure is needed around that conversation. So if we dive into that one, I'd like to hear from folks about their experience with it and how they would counsel on that. The second was about the role and the positioning of individual contributors. I'm gonna share when we get to that article. I'll share a personal experience with that and what we've been doing with it. But the idea is that there's a rich resource out there that is underutilized, if I encapsulate the whole article in a short phrase. Next article is about a circular strategy. I got hung up on that circular strategy thing for a little bit, and but it's a circular strategy to fit your business model. Not sure what was actually going on in that article. I'm hoping that some folks can help us understand what they really meant by a circular strategy and what is the nature of such a thing. And then finally, the model makeover. That is a not the final, but the next is the model makeover. And that is probably the most popular thing that I'm running into with the leaders that are in my emerging executives learning group, is the reinvention of the way they do what they do, or what they do in their organizations. And some of these are not small organizations. We're talking 20,000, 35,000 person organizations in US, Europe, and Canada. And then I believe this is the final. Let me scroll down here. Yeah, the final article is the big power of small goals. Quick wins, I guess, is another way of expressing that. And the idea is to build goal seeking and goal achievement muscle in an organization. No clue. I very often can predict which ones people are going to have the most anxiety over and the ones that they appreciated the most, but this group is a bit more of a challenge. So let's see what you think about your reaction and interest in these, and we'll break out into groups and have some conversations. Or if we're small enough, we'll all stay together. What do you think, Tanya?
Oh, I say we definitely keep the group together for the size we've got here. And do you want to start with most useful or one that causes tension?
Tension.
All right. It's a fun way to mix it up a little. And for those of you who are first timers, what we just kind of do is use this as a quick pulse to start the flow of conversation. You usually kind of eventually touch on a variety of the articles, but this these polls just kind of help us randomly pick which one. Not so randomly, I guess. All right. Let's see here. We tapped on almost every one of them, but we do have one that has the majority. And I'll go ahead and share the results.
Model makeover. So what's causing tension for you about model makeover?
So I'll jump in. And since I'm new, you can tell me, you know, feel free to adjust me. I've spent over 30 years in telco and actually had an opportunity to work on some of the initiatives that this article attempts to address in the operating model. So there were a lot of feelings as I read through it, both things that I've seen attempted that were in line with what McKinsey was saying around getting cross-functional teams together, customer personalization, getting into even not just personalization with purchases, but also personalization when it comes to network performance. And I've seen large initiatives that attempt to be cross-functional in nature kind of collapse on themselves just because of the number of organizations that needed to be involved. Even when they tried to call out, you know, one or two use cases and not really boil the ocean. So it was interesting to see the points here, but I had a lot of thoughts around what I've seen not work and how you might go out to an organization again and take a better approach. So that an initiative stands a chance and doesn't collapse under its own weight.
I'll go next because I'm on that article. What she said, and I'll add on exact same thing. I'll add on. I worked in that space. I'm about so from 1995 is when the wireless kind of evolution started. To replace the land infrastructure with wireless infrastructure. So in that time from 1995 to around 2004, the industry contracted roughly 25%, may have been closer to 30%, you know, as that transition happened. And that is where I actually started my career at that time in the early 2000s. And I worked for everybody, AT&T and Verizon and just name a company I worked for them. I was in the IT and operations. Exactly what Laura said, all of this stuff has been tried and it has not worked. They, you know, so something else needs to, you know, there needs to be some other perspective or some other way or something. And I had a recent just anecdote I want to add on. My phone was stolen about 6 months ago. I'm on a family plan, so I had to go to Verizon to, you know, get a new phone and all this stuff. Spent 2 days. And the reason it took 2 days was because there was a $13 outstanding balance, which anybody would be happy to pay. By the time I got done with 2 days, I would have paid $1,300. No one could figure out how to pay it. We just couldn't. They could not figure out how to accept $13. So I had to just redo everything. I mean, you know, the poor guy was a star, but you know, this is just how bad it is. And again, what Laura was saying, the that article is not, that's everything everybody has done. It hasn't taken. Somebody needs to think of something else.
Well, and to add on to what you said, one of the thoughts that came to mind when I was reading it is this all-encompassing approach to get better, but yet the simple things that you need to resolve for a customer are still so hard. And that example like you gave is the perfect one.
$13.
Anybody else? What caused angst? Well, I have a tendency to have pictures flash in my head when I read things and see things. Is the telco a telco? So when I initially think telco, I think of my great aunt on her roller skates, unplugging one connector and plugging in another connector so that Ethel and Miriam can talk on the telephone. That ain't today.
Well,
Is
with
telco more of a distribution service for content providers? And is that the recognition that's missing from customer personalization?
I think that part is an and. I think when you peel it all back, a lot are still pipelines. And they'll throw a service, a streaming service, or another service on top to catch your attention. But I don't think of an example that comes to mind where they've leapt out of being a pipeline. And maybe I have a narrow focus, but it just doesn't come to mind.
One more time, I agree.
Anything else?
So for me, when I think of it on the customer side, though, and I hear like, we, you know, these companies have done these things, I don't see it on the customer side, right? So if I look at Verizon, you know, I can't even talk to the same person around my Verizon Wireless and my, you know, Verizon mobile plan, right? Like I literally, they have to move me back and forth to different people when it's the same company. So I look at, okay, did they put in their strategies for, you know, consistent and seamless experience? Anyone work for Verizon?
And you'll see today there was an announcement. What you're talking about, I no longer work there, but I spent a lot of years there. Today there was an announcement bringing like my home together with my wireless plan so that, you know, as you're considering fixed wireless access or your broadband, if you have it with Verizon and you're also a wireless customer, kind of bringing that together. But still, there's a lot of work to be done to make sure that the interaction with the customer is identical, because behind the approach, it's been my experience, there's still separate channels, separate groups.
Right. Yeah. But that's my home bringing it together with mobile. It's not Fios.
Fios is in there. It's wrapped up in there. It's Fios, okay. Fixed wireless access or Fios, that's encompassed under my home now, at least logically, and in the what's being relayed to the customer.
Okay. Yep.
Tanya, what's our next target here? Maybe one more in this category of angst.
Let me open it again and see. It was speed results. All right, we had a two-way tie. Leaders need to reframe the return to office conversation or the big power of small goals. Both of them received 2 of the 8.
Okay. Well, let's go with the return to office. Is anyone actually dealing in any sort of an organization design role with regards to for clients, with regards or internal customers with reframing that conversation?
Not more recently, but have had probably a year ago interesting conversations because, you know, when the whole everything referred to in that article started with the required back to office, just how absenteeism went up and calling in sick and people that had missed a deadline for 2 years missed a deadline. So had a lot of data then, but it's not been more recent. I was interested to see this article, actually, because I thought that I think most places have kind of reached they may not be a happy arrangement, but they've reached an arrangement, was kind of the impression I had gotten.
Mm-hmm.
Could be wrong, but that was my impression.
Is it a topic of discussion for anyone else? Well, I listened in on a conference with a big name in HR consulting and HR education. And the conversation is lingering, and the direction that they're taking on it now is that the global return may be worked for almost everybody. The people who left, some are missed and some aren't missed from the organizations, but it's resolved down to an it's not a group conversation anymore. It's a individual accommodation and an individual value preservation set of conversations that's taking place. And their HR generalists aren't equipped to handle the conversations. They just don't know what the executives and the boards of directors think about it. And they're struggling to get them to actually make a non, what would you call it, marketing statement about it, but rather what they expect as individuals and collectively as a top leadership team. So they're kind of stuck on what to do. There are individuals who have been given the exception because they're exceptional individuals and contributors.
Yeah. This article was useful because it did raise the trade-offs, because I hadn't seen, I've read a lot of different articles on this, and where this article actually said, you need to think of these trade-offs and acknowledge them, you know, the commute times and where people want to live and all that. I hadn't actually seen that anywhere else. Where I thought it kind of went off track was I got a little queasy when it said something about, you know, creating FOMO as opposed to creating a good experience as to why you want to come in the office, because most other articles say that. So, but that just even acknowledging that, I feel like that what you just said, Jim, that's the hurdle. No one has acknowledged the trade-offs. And then the other observation that I've had in reading all these articles and you know, making this inviting is they don't acknowledge some of the things that existed previously, which are still in place about even coming to the office. And they say make it inviting, but they talk about things like, conversation areas and coffee machines. My experience, prior to 2020 was you had something like, you know, executives who have a stay-at-home partner or whatever, and a nanny and a housekeeper, get in their car in the garage, then they drive to parking underneath the office building, so they're never actually in a temperature variation of 10 degrees. Meanwhile, the people who don't have nannies, don't have housekeepers, park 8 blocks away and walk in sideways rain to get to the office. So those things don't come up either. So I think it's those two things, but I haven't seen anybody actually address what I think is the real problem. I think it's those two things. I think it's trade-offs, and I think it's misplacing their energy and what actually would attract you into the office.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought these were the two articles, the two first were great articles looking at this issue. And I've got a group of about 20 nieces and nephews who are mid-level management in a number of companies, including Amazon, number of HR consultancies. And the statement that was made earlier about individual conversations, individual choices, really resonates with me. And it takes me back to my first days in HR, which were around, those were the days where we were mechanically tracking who took days off, illness days. And the people that had too many illness days needed to have a talking to because they obviously weren't motivated. We've come a long way since then, but to me, this is just the next step in that HR generalists with general direction from the top really are the face of the company to many of the employees and have, in most companies I'm aware of, have the latitude to offer, you know, whether they're formal or informal benefits, working at home. And most of the people that I was just at a wedding where my cadre of 20 nieces and nephews were there, and we had a number of fascinating conversations. And what really came out is that these were people that were all happy, and they enjoyed that working at home. They enjoyed going in. So whether they were HR or not, they seemed to have found that sweet spot or that balance. And some were 2 days a week, some were 1 day a month, it was all over the map, but it was dependent on their specific circumstances. And I think that's where this is all headed.
Yeah. And I think the gist of the conversation was that these executives, HR executives, felt bad that their generalists were sort of stuck in the middle of this with no coaching, no facts to back them up on things, people overriding their decisions and things like that. And it's still being worked out because it is getting to the individual. People moved out of state, for example, out of California to save money.
Yep.
They moved 60, 70 miles away from where they used to walk to work.
Yep.
Because they moved out of a $10,000 a month apartment to a $5,000 a month mortgage.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going on there.
Yeah. One of the people I talked to actually works in California and did something very similar. My observation is different. I don't, the HR people I talked to from medium to large companies did not feel like they were stuck. They felt like they were getting clear direction from, and of course, maybe a specific group. A couple of them were at Amazon and they have some very, not Amazon, I'm sorry, Google, but have some very clear executive direction. So I didn't get the sense that they felt stuck. And in fact, the HR generalist for a medium-sized company said, she talks weekly to her HR executives about specific cases and they agree on how to handle them. So it may be dependent on company.
That's my question as well, because I'm, of course, in a large company and always have been, and everybody I know is, and we haven't had any, you know, it's pretty clear, you know, what, you know, if you got to be there and if you don't and all that. So I wondered if there was some pattern in that, you know, if it's by industry or by company size or something, because I would echo what Rich said.
So is this an organization design, let's say, archetype that typical design methodologies don't address? Would location of worker be a topic for organization design in your practices or in your opinion?
I think it depends, like it always did, because in some industries, yes, like if we're designing, you know, like urgent care centers, then yes, the doctors need to be where they can get to the center. But if you're, or the cooks need to get to the kitchen, or, you know, I think it depends on the industry and what you're doing. So I think it depends.
And it depends on the project. The first org design I did in 1995, the executive sponsor called me in and said, I don't care what you do, this whole highfalutin org design stuff, I don't really care about.
Just get a butt coming.
just get this team to move from Houston to New Orleans because that's where the work is.
Yeah.
And it was, so it was a primary criteria in the design. And the team came back with a whole bunch of fabulous recommendations, including all the reasons they weren't going to move and sold it to the executive. So for me, it's always been front and center in some projects.
So the other one on that, to that bent, was the power of small goals. That was the tie, I believe. Is that correct? Thoughts?
I didn't vote for that one. It would have been the next one I would have put on. But what I would say is I thought it was a very nice overview that may be a little naive, because you can set these goals. And the thing is, you don't get off your goals because you get off your goals. You get off your goals because somebody is frantic and needs you to do something, I think is what causes it most of the time. So I thought it would have been helpful. They missed an opportunity to talk about that a little bit, around the kind of things that derail you. That's what I thought could have just, you know, made it a really great article versus good. We might have lost the people that voted for it because we had some connection problems. Yeah. They dropped.
I voted for that one because I've worked a good number of large-scale complex transformations, companies reinventing themselves, like Intercontinental Hotels. And what I took away from earlier work before getting there was that these small goals and quick wins create, set up individuals for disappointments when they get challenges that they just have no way of dealing with. They get used to these incremental changes. Back when I was in the IT world, let's go back to the engineering world, even before that, in the engineering world, we always broke big things down into small pieces. And then you made the small pieces work and you put them all together. That was different from what this article seems to be talking about in terms of setting small goals as a way of building camaraderie and self-esteem, et cetera, because what happens when you come to the one that you just can't deal with?
One of the challenges I also see in, you know, the way they're talking about the daily goals is I think many times employees lose sight of the bigger picture goal, right? So I would prefer it to be, and I know they're supposed to be incremental goals in aligned to a bigger goal, but that's where I think the power is, that when we get our colleagues to, you know, identify a manageable amount of goals and then understanding what they're doing daily to achieve that outcome is where the power is. Otherwise, you are in danger of getting people to be focusing more on tasks, right, than outcomes.
Mm-hmm. So what about in your experience and practice, Do you design goal setting as a series of negotiations or as a one-step delegation?
The way I've designed it in the past is the manager is reviewing the team goals. Right. So it's kind of setting the context and then asking team members to identify what it is, how do they contribute, you know, to those very specific team goals, and then the collaboration back and forth to make sure the individual goals are aligned and they're the right goals for the individual.
Any other practices around designing the goal setting system?
It depends critically on the organization and the industry. So some of the small businesses I consult with that have work teams of hourly workers with foremen and supervisors, there's very little negotiation. The foreman says, you know, we're going to do 12 of these this week. And if there's any negotiation, it's with the operations manager, but typically they both know the capabilities of the teams and it's a pretty clear process. And this is not something that's done year by year. It's done week by week. Mm-hmm. In some of the professional organizations, you know, the 8,000 technical professionals in a global company I worked with, the value of the goal setting was not so much in the goals, but was in the discussion around what are the things we're focused on this year. And they, in many cases, were quarter by quarter, year by year. And the value of the conversation was, what are we working on? And where does it fit in the priorities? And let's make sure it's aligned with everything else going on in the organization. So it was an ongoing part of strategic alignment. in a couple of the software companies. One of my very successful nieces is a VP in a software company, and their teams are deeply into Agile, and goal setting is project by project, week by week, day by day, as things change and morph. So I think it depends very strongly on the team, the company, and the industry.
Yeah, I would echo what Richard said. I think it comes, the efficacy of goal setting comes a lot down to the conversation that they have. How consistently are they talking about goals? I mean, the set it, forget it, you know, whether it's once a year, whether it's top down, I think it comes into how it's, how does the work focus on the conversation, the goals, and what are those discussions that are happening? And to Richard's point, like methodologies, software companies, they love OKR approaches, right? Those are still breaking goals down into smaller pieces that funnel up. But again, the efficacy is really determined by that quarterly conversation when they're strategically coming together and saying, okay, let's look at these, let's assess these. And, you know, are they serving our strategy? What do we need to throw to the side? What do we need to keep going with? So I do think it's the, as the articles kind of talk about habits, you know, at the organizational level, like how consistently are we talking about goals? Because I find a lot of organizations set goals and they have good intentions, but they don't follow through with the behaviors that probably need to sustain to actually achieve some of those goals. So
I think there's a, balance too in set. So I went and looked at some of my old articles. I wrote two blogs, one, you should set goals, and another one, be careful about setting goals. So I think the risk, and when I read my old stuff, it was from like 2017, the risk about setting goals is that people will do the goal even if it becomes obsolete. So I see that all the time where it's like, well, this is what we're being rewarded on, so we have to do it even if it makes no sense. And I think that kind of thing is, what's the process to change a goal, or how changeable is it, is key to include.
Yeah. I like what you shared there. And we think about goal setting in that context. The conversation should be a very honest one, right? Does it serve the strategy? Does it serve where we're going? And that connecting back to the team level and really linking things up for the employees so that they can make the connections. Because a lot of times that top-down approach, when we're pushing them down, we're not helping them make connections. And I think a lot of the more sustainable ones are bottom-up approaches that have a top-level strategy that's very clear, because then they can connect the work that they do to be creative, right? And think about better ways of working to actually solve some of the problems and, you know, really deliver value to the strategy. So I think goal setting is very, there's a lot of stuff out there about goal setting. So I think this is a very controversial, I think this is a very, like, it's a good one. I'm glad we're discussing it. It's my first time here, so I love the conversation on goals, and thanks for letting me chime in.
I'm an old Hoshin planning guy from way back. And we took Hoshin planning and we turned it into negotiation conversations. Here's what I want. I want from the top down. Here's what I want. I want 30% revenue growth in 24 months. Come back in 3 weeks with a rough course of action to make that happen. Well, that is the directive part. Everything else is conversations all the way down to the front line as to what do we need to do to get there. We had a very large insurance company adopt that practice, and every leader at every level said in the follow-up surveys that they learned more about their organization in the first 3 months of using that process than they had in the previous years, because they had no clue what went on 2-3 levels below them in the organization. So your point on the conversations as being the value add to the process, and then helping them structure those conversations in a way, can have some pretty remarkable results. Now, by the way, this was a company whose CEO didn't believe in strategy. He think it inhibited entrepreneurialism in the organization. So everybody just sort of had to guess what the board of directors wanted, because he was the only one who talked to the board of directors. How about the other end? Somebody nominate one that really struck you as being useful today and useful to the people you work with. We have the individual contributors and the circular strategy.
I liked that one. I thought that was a really useful summary of a different kind of a business model where you're thinking about, you know, having, I guess, a smaller footprint or reducing your footprint and factoring that in versus just getting to market. So I thought that was an interesting and good summary, and I hadn't seen a lot written on it. I mean, I know it's out there, you know, sustainable things and whatnot, but I thought it was really, really well done the way they put the whole thing together.
So my question takeaway is the sense of circularity.
What was that, Jim? Which way?
Anyway.
What do you mean, Jim?
Well, how does circularity fit into the business model choices and design? What is circularity? I understand things like velocity and flow and precision.
No, they're talking more about sustainability.
Excuse me?
They're talking more about sustainability, reusing things and repurposing, what do they say? Repair, refurbishment, reclaiming, and regenerating. So my question on that article is, how do we design for it? Anyone have thoughts on that?
I have zero experience in that in that space. That's why I thought it was interesting.
When you describe it that way, Janina, I think of work I did at Dell Computer, where Dell Computer insisted that all products that went into making a personal computer had to be delivered in such a way that they did not have to be unpackaged, and all of the delivery platforms had to be reusable. So all the graphics cards, for example, they came in packaging that was a dispenser to the operator on the production line. And they had to pick up their own, quote, trash and refill the bins. So the bins went from cardboard to plastic to ABS over about 3 years, and everybody got on board with it. And that was a clear cycle. It came in and it went back, and it came in and it went back over and over and over again. I can't think of anything else that explicitly matches that approach.
Yeah, I mean, it might just be a process step, but I wonder too if the problem was lack of process or lack of profitability.
Yeah. Okay, I think we're going to get through all. What about our individual contributors? Thoughts?
I thought that was another missed opportunity as well, because what he's describing is a concept of like an incubator. And so there are various organizations that have set that up at different times, and he kind of called it a different name and talked about everything, but it would have been nice if he brought in some of that other thinking around like entrepreneurs and, you know, just different kind of variations of that. But it was a nice write-up of his project.
Any other thoughts? Anybody explicitly design the value contribution of individual contributors into their org design work?
I've seen attempts at it that were a little too overly prescriptive. And I thought what was presented in the article, you know, with some prescriptive networking within an organization for individual contributors, even if you could start to group them based on how you know their work interfaces with each other, so they would be potentially good collaborators to look at each other's work, I thought that could be really powerful, also in the context of getting people together in the office to work through something together. And as you know, we look at what can be done remotely, what can be done in person. But then the other thing that came to mind is you really need an organization or microcosms of an organization where the trust factor is high so that people are willing to open up even with peers. You know, if you've got a culture that people are used to picking each other apart, or they're used to speaking just to get their ideas across rather than listening, you know, you'd have to deal with some of those, I think, cultural issues before you got the real benefit and power out of the individual contributors. But it was simple, but I thought it had a lot of uses that you could put into play with just a little bit of coordination.
A step back from all that continues to amaze me is the compensation model has to have an individual contributor track. It's usually called professional track. And I'm amazed how many organizations don't have that. They just have the managerial track where you can't get anywhere unless you have people reporting to you. So if you haven't fixed that professional track, then all of the other things aren't really going to come to fruition. There'll be some specialist roles and, you know, like data science or something like that. But otherwise, it's not really going to work out culturally.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I also have been involved in a number of introducing the use of cross-functional teams. And it's surprising how many organizations have individual contributor compensation, but there's no aspect of team contribution. And in fact, one company I worked for, we came back with a recommendation on that. And senior management was very clear. They said, individual merit is what our company was founded on. We're not changing that. All this team stuff, if you want to put something around being a team player on the individual performance, that's fine. But we are not we're not going to be rewarding teams. And it was a fundamental value. So I didn't agree with it, but I think it's something that comes up. And I think you raise a good point. You need a managerial scorecard that's based on a balanced scorecard. You need an individual contributor scorecard. And I firmly believe you need to be looking at teams, because otherwise you're not going to really optimize your team contributions. And by the way, another point that you made me think of, which was as we were implementing teams, one of the questions that came up is, what do we do with these brilliant innovators that if we put them on a team, it's going to reduce their effectiveness? They'll have to get along with people. And we actually ran an experiment where we put one on a team and one we didn't. And the one that was put on a team had to spend a lot of time getting along with people, and it ended up really improving their performance. It improved it. It really connected them into the company they were working with, and their innovations became much more focused on things that were useful. So just FYI.
You just caught the flashback to when I moved out of the engineering lab at Bose Corporation into the emerging information technology group. And I didn't realize it, but they were putting me, I was reporting to a behavior modification expert who was asked by the chairman of the board and the CEO to make an executive leader out of me. I left the company as CIO a good number of years later. We did some work with a very large bank, US bank, and somebody came up with the idea that we wanted topic leaders and people leaders. And topic leaders turned into subject leaders and then turned into thought leaders before the executive committee agreed on it. That became critical to something we were doing at the bank, which, and I apologize for the long handle, but it gets all the words into it. It was directed self-organizing teams. And the idea was that people to whom others look to for advice and specific understanding and knowledge of topics are leaders. So recognize it. Provide a learning path for them that brings out their collaboration skills and their teaching skills and their communication skills, et cetera. And you've got your people leaders who are then there for teaming and the such. And the same as Richard laid out is they saw people absolutely blossom throughout the organization with just a little bit of mentoring and coaching to help them, quote, get along and contribute. And the other thing that happened was the bullies were exiled. That was a quote from the chief human resources officer, and they left the company.
Oh, that's
because
good.
They weren't being rewarded.
That's a bold move.
Anybody else doing anything explicit around individual contributors? Go ahead.
Well, the one thing about this article I wanted to kind of bring up also is what structures do you use to make small collections of individual contributors? Because Laura, I wonder what you did there. But you know, I've done a lot with creating communities of practice, which does some of the things he's talking about, but for a purpose of a common discipline, right? So I don't know, like, if he was just pulling together random collections of individual contributors, or like how they were structured.
Yeah,
doesn't seem to be indicated.
No, he doesn't.
And I saw a couple other approaches. One was similar to communities of practice. There were domain or thought topic areas that people could self-subscribe to, but then went so far as there was a review process and you had to be accepted into it, which didn't resonate well with the people that were really eager and then got turned away. And then another approach I saw was, you know, of course, in an IT organization, you throw software at it. Mm-hmm. So created a great application to manage your innovation projects, but, you know, not so much deal with the people behaviors.
Yeah, Laura, that's where my head went, was the software side of things, because you're seeing a lot of technology platforms that organizations are leveraging that have direct impacts on the way we're designed, right? The gig workforce, right? Gig jobs and individual contributors coming together on projects and as teams, even though as individual contributors that very quickly move through the stages of the team, right? And disband frequently. And they are just individual contributors, but they're just kind of reforming around these teams. Now, a lot of platforms that we're using in organizations support that gig work internally, right? It's not just an external function. So when you talked about software, as I was reading this article, I just kept thinking, now I come from a software world too, so I'm biased, absolutely. But I kept thinking about this, like these are all individual contributors coming together to form these teams, you know, so and it's happening within the organization. So it's kind of like your Upworks, right? That these companies are then creating these pockets where you can do that work. So you can keep just going through gigs internally, right? Just because you are a high level individual contributor and you can add value, can handle a lot of work, well, let's give them opportunities to do the work. And they're rolling them over and they can retain the talent and they can pay them well and they can contribute a lot and do a lot of things. And they can do it at the pace they want to. So I see that just from a tech standpoint that then inherently changes the design of the organization because it's creating this own ecosystem of individual contributors that can keep contributing to teams and then just disbanding from those teams and then going into new ones.
Any other thoughts? How'd we do?
Did we do them all?
Did we wring them dry?
I missed a few. Okay.
You did. You got through all five articles in some basis and efficiently used your time together. So,
wow.
We've got, 5-10 minutes left. If anybody wants to further explore or has a question about any other topics.
I had a thought going back to the beginning of this conversation and just having a few people. I wonder if we might attract more folks if the expectation was you not read all five articles and be ready to talk about them, but something like maybe scan them, scan the summaries that are on the email from EODF, and maybe read one if it really piques your interest. I don't think most members of ODF are quite as arrogant as I am, which is, I'm happy to come in whether I read them or not. I'm sure I'll have an opinion. But I think we all benefit when we have more people involved. I wonder if there's a way to encourage more attendance.
Yeah, thanks for the feedback. We had someone drop. This is the second time we've had that. Our Jan, she dropped. She said she didn't have any context. And I felt like it's fairly clear. So we need to get some feedback from somebody who hasn't done this a bunch, because I thought it was clear. You know, you get the articles, what you said, you read them, and maybe we need to back off, make that a little less binary in terms of how we do that. But that was the other thing, I think, that maybe we have an opportunity to be more clear of what we're going to do.
Yeah, I'm a first-time listener, right? First-time joiner.
Oh, great.
I would say that I liked what you shared, Richard, where the expectation that you're setting is like, hey, you don't got to read them all. Because even as you were talking, I didn't get the articles before. So I'm reading some of these, and there was a couple I was reading. I was like, okay, I'm not going to talk about that one. You know, there's a few, but there's some that in the domain we're probably have an intimate understanding of. And as we read them, we can understand and talk about our perspectives or our opinions on them. So I really like that, because, we talked about on the call, the ego threat, right? Everybody wants to feel like they have the answer, and that's a real thing. Or as consultants, a lot of us, it's probably just part of it. You don't want to be wrong, but as practitioners, we know that that's the case. So I do like the fact that you said, hey, set the expectation. Just if you didn't read them all, it's okay. Come join in a conversation. Because it was a lot learning just sitting in here and listening to you all talk that I took away from the way you talked about the article, even as I was scanning through it, that I think they'll appreciate not having that expectation, like, got to read them all. But it's more engaging the discussion and, hey, learn some stuff from other practitioners. Because as long as a few people read them, we can learn from that, those people, as they're processing and questioning each other, which I found was really helpful. And I was glad I attended. So
that you just triggered for me a thought of, and this happened maybe 6 months ago, which is I looked at the EODF cover note and I said, you know what? None of these sound interesting at all. I think I'll join the call because I like this network of people. I'm sure I'll learn something. But, maybe that could be an expectation of if you scan the EODF thing and they all sound bad and you don't want to read any of them, that would be good feedback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I saw Amy Edmondson's name and I'm like, I like her. I like her books. She's good.
So why don't I'll take the action, Tanya, and maybe we can collaborate on how we might tweak the invite and share it with the Community Engagement and Learning Committee also, since I guess they own it. We own it.
Aaron, yeah, I mean, it's been the same basic, this is what you're going to do. And then we changed the articles for years. So we haven't
for a
really,
long time.
Yeah,
Aaron, can we get one other piece of feedback before we let you go? Was it clear what you're going to be doing? There were two parts to this. There was Rich's suggestion, which we're taking, around reading it. But the other one was, we've had a few people say they didn't understand the context. Can you give us any feedback on that when you signed up? Was it clear? Or what
it was pretty clear. And I like how